Luke chapter 19, we'll start in verse 28. As Jesus is coming out of Jericho and giving running into Zacchaeus, giving the parable of the minas, and going through those things, and now Luke skips the part where Jesus goes and spends the Sabbath with Mary, Martha, and Lazarus at Bethany, and straight from where they were at Jericho, and that they're going to be going into Jerusalem. Okay, so Luke 19:28. When Jesus had said this, he went on ahead, going up to Jerusalem, and it came to pass, when he drew near to Bethphage and Bethany, at the mount called Olivet, that he sent two of his disciples. So, he's on the Mount of Olives, and as we talked about last week, that we'll plan to go over again next week, I think. This is on the Sunday now, the 10th of Nisan. So we've already passed the Sabbath, and we're on the 10th of Nisan. And at the end of this chapter, the first thing Jesus does is goes and cleanses the temple. So we know that that's on the 10th of Nisan. And then this triumphal entry is what is known as the as Palm Sunday. So putting all of that together, this triumphal entry was done on a Sunday, the 10th of Nisan. And then we know Jesus was sacrificed on the preparation day, the 14th of Nisan. And so that puts it that he was sacrificed on Thursday, not Friday. And then as we looked at that, matches up with the 3 days and the three nights, where you do not get that on the Friday. Okay. And so he's on the Mount of Olives here, and that's where he's going to start his entry into Jerusalem. And no, we don't have to wonder why, because from Zechariah 14:9, it was prophesied that the Messiah would stand on the Mount of Olives, and then he would be Lord and King over all of the earth. So this is the beginning of that. Okay, verse 29. And then Jesus sent two of his disciples, saying to them, "Go into the village opposite of you, where as you enter, you will find a colt tied on which no one has ever sat. Loose it and bring it here." Now, why was it necessary that you have a colt on which no one has ever sat upon? Well, the answer to that is, if someone had already ridden this colt, then it was not worthy for a king. It would have to be another colt used. So, here is the other thing. I'll go ahead and read verse 31 and come to this other part. "And if anyone asks you, why are you loosing it? Thus you say, shall say to him, because the Lord has need of it." Okay. Now, how did Jesus know that there would be a colt tied up at this certain place? He told them the exact location to go and at the exact time. This is obviously demonstrating and showing the omniscience that Jesus had, the all-knowing that Jesus had. He knew exactly where this colt would be at the time. Now, there are skeptics that said here a few weeks before, maybe a month before, something like that, when Jesus was in Bethany and he raised Lazarus from the dead, because that was the last time he was in this area, that he arranged it then, in the neighborhood of maybe a month ago, but a few weeks earlier. But Kaufman's counter to that was, Jesus would not have known several weeks in advance that this colt would be tied up in this exact place at this exact time, several weeks into the future. So, regardless of what happened, and how it was, Luke is definitely communicating to all of mankind that Jesus knew all things. And this was not the only place. It's several different times, different writers of the gospel would refer to that Jesus knowing all things and all men's thoughts. So this is just another demonstration of this omniscience. Okay, verse 32. So those who were sent went their way and found it just as Jesus had said to them. But as they were loosing the colt, the owners of it said to them, "Why are you loosing the colt?" Then the two disciples said, "The Lord has need of him." And then they brought the colt to Jesus. Okay, now, Matthew's account lists that they also brought the mother of this young donkey with him. But Mark and Luke only mention the colt. And so why is that? Well, obviously, only this colt was important, but they had the mother of this donkey with him also, and so actually they got both, but the mother was inconsequential, except if you lead the mother along, guess what? An unbroken and untrained donkey, a young donkey or even a horse would do. He's going to follow that mother. Whereas if they did not bring the mother, then this, it is very difficult to... I'm more familiar with the horses. You can hardly get a colt horse away from his mother. They just stay right beside that mother, but then they will follow wherever that mother goes. They will go. And so that is the explanation of why this was. And I was also looking for... Matthew had done this in the past, Matthew and Luke, and it was with the demon-possessed men that were in Decapolis, east, beyond the Jordan, on the east side of the Sea of Galilee. And it, Luke only records that there was one demon-possessed man. Whereas Matthew tells us that there were two demon-possessed men. So this has happened in at least another occasion to where Matthew gives us the full account of exactly the way it was, where Luke gives us only the most important. And the explanation of why Luke only mentions one of the demon-possessed men is this one was the more aggressive of the two is what is thought. He was the more belligerent one, and he was the domineering one of the two. The other one was more recessive. But actually, there were two demon-possessed men. Just as here, there were two animals, and Luke and Mark only list the one. Well, that was the one that was important. There was no prophecy, no bearing on talking about the mother, having a mother with the colt. It was only that the Messiah was going to ride into Jerusalem on a colt. Okay. And verse 35, then they brought him to Jesus, and they threw their own clothes on the colt, and they set Jesus on him. Oh, one more thing. The owner of this animal, whenever these disciples said, "The Lord has need of him," he said, "Okay, we'll take him." So what is this about? The explanation to this is, obviously, this owner of these two animals are either followers of Jesus, as being disciples, or that was unbeknownst to these apostles, or they were... that this owner already realized that Jesus was the Messiah, as this whole group of people that went with Jesus as he went into Jerusalem. There's a massive throng of people that went with Jesus and were surrounding the roads as he walked in, and they lined the roads with these palm leaves. And so he is one of this group. And so when they said the Lord has need of him, they probably this owner had already seen the apostles with Jesus. And so they recognized him, recognized them. And when they said the Lord has needed him, then this owner knows, okay, yes, the Messiah needs him. So whatever he needs, take him. So that is the explanation of who this is. And it's not just some unknown person that is ignorant and doesn't know anything that's going on and blindly. Whenever they said the Lord has need of him, he knew that they were meaning the Messiah. And so, yes, take the Messiah, take it for whatever the Messiah needs him for. And I'm going to say, very likely, with these Israelites knowing the Old Testament the way that they should have, and I believe that they did, they would have known, and this man would have known and been honored, that these prophecies about the Messiah riding on a colt, and it would be his colt. So I would figure that he knew that what this was about, and he was thrilled and felt it an honor that God has chosen his animals to, or his colt to be the one that the Messiah would ride. Okay. And verse 36, and as he went, many spread their clothes on the road. And now this was also done several passages in the Old Testament in like Kings. And I forgot the other passages, but McGarvey is the one that gave these references, and I just didn't write them down. But this has happened several times. Jehu's army, whenever they defeated the evil, wicked king and Jezebel, then the new king, whatever, I forgot what his name was, whichever one then was put in as king, they put down their clothes as he came into town. And that was just a symbol recognizing this person as their king. And so that's what they were doing. And this was done on the 10th of Nisan. And what was the command that God gave Moses 1,500 years earlier? That they were to choose their sacrifice on the 10th of Nisan. And they are choosing the Messiah as their king, and that is symbolic of them choosing in which the Messiah is about to be sacrificed. And so they're choosing their sacrifice here in Jesus by saying that he is the king, and then they're about the king is about to be sacrificed. Okay, verse 37. Then, as Jesus was now drawing near the descent of the Mount of Olives, the whole multitude of the people, of the disciples, began to rejoice and praise God with a loud voice for all the mighty works they had seen, saying, "Blessed is the King who comes in the name of the Lord, peace in heaven and glory in the highest." And some of the Pharisees called to him from the crowd, "Teacher, rebuke your disciples." But Jesus answered and said to them, "I tell you that if these should keep silent, the stones would immediately cry out." And then the commentators said, very likely Jesus is referring to Habakkuk 2:11 that says the stones will cry out. And now, other than that, none of the commentators had a very good explanation of exactly what Jesus is meaning, and they wrote several paragraphs on it, but it didn't make much sense. And so the only thing that I got out of what they wrote was, and I forgot which one of these, I think it was J.W. McGarvey, said that after the destruction of the temple and after all of that, what Jesus called was a desolation of abominations, after all of that happened, then it was stone cold quiet after the massacre. Then the stones, that there was not one upon another left of the temple, definitely cried out in rebuke that of what they should have done. They made a huge mistake by not accepting Jesus as their Messiah. Other than that, I am not sure exactly what this is. So verse 41. Now as Jesus drew near, he saw the city and wept over it, saying, "If you had known, even you, especially in this your day, the things that make for your peace, but now they are hidden from you." So he's telling them what's going on in this day would make peace for you for a long time, but that was hidden from them because now this is a few of the people. Now, how few? Probably, I'll say tens of thousands. There was estimated to be somewhere between 2 and 3 million Jews that would come every year, approximately half the population of all of Judea and Galilee would come to Jerusalem for the Passover. So between 2 and 3 million. And so there's probably a minority of the people that are here, but out of 2 to 3 million, you could still have 100,000 people or 200,000 people. And that's a big, massive crowd. And so there was, I'm confident, tens of thousands of people, but that's still the minority. And that's why Jesus is saying that you're not realizing that if all of you others that are not here accepting me as your king, this would be how you would have peace, but instead it's going to be destruction now that you've rejected me. And then verse 43 and 44 explains this. "For days will come upon you when your enemies will build an embankment around you, surround you, and close you in on every side." And Jesus revisits this on the Wednesday morning as he leaves the temple for the last time. And he tells them, "When you see the armies surround the city, get out. Don't even go back to your house to get your coat or get any food. You leave immediately. If you're on your rooftop, you don't go back into the house. You exit off the side of your house and you get out of the city right then." And that's obviously what he's referring to. Now, he's telling the whole crowd, hear this. Now, here in Luke 21, when he's talking about the destruction of the temple, he's telling just the disciples, just the 12 apostles at that time, which it gets recorded and spread throughout the Christians at that time. And so that's when we looked, there were two historians that recorded, they were from from 2 and 300 AD, but they recorded that there were no Christians that were left in Jerusalem. And it was only the Jews that got massacred because of this warning. And when the army surrounded Jerusalem, they got out immediately. But also, when your enemies will build an embankment around you. I've mentioned this in the past, but I was watching on YouTube. There was a historian that had a documentary about the destruction of Jerusalem. And it took the Roman army 3 days, and they constructed a wall, an embankment around the city. Now, there, of course, was the wall. Jerusalem was a walled city, but they built a perimeter, a smaller wall than what Jerusalem had. But still, it was a barrier that they could not get across. And it took them 3 days, is what this historian recorded. And so I'm confident that that's what Jesus is talking about. Your enemies will build an embankment around you, surround you, and close you in on every side. And this was the warning. Whenever you saw the armies get around, and it took them 3 days to build that wall. And it seems most logical to me. This is what Jesus was talking about. You get out then. And I'm confident there were just a few Christians, not many to begin with. And the Roman soldiers all the other Jews, they felt very safe in this city. So the mass of people were not trying to exit. It was just a few people, and that was their opportunity for that 3-day time. But they didn't have 3 days. They had less than that, and that's why the urgency and the immediacy was, as soon as you see the soldiers start to surround and they're building this wall, you get out then. That's your chance to escape. And the soldiers were busy building this wall instead of catching a few of what would be Christians at that time escaping, which they wouldn't know any different from them just being Jews. But this obviously is a reference to that. And then verse 44. And that your enemies will level you and your children within you to the ground. And this obviously is a reference to Jerusalem will be utterly leveled to the ground, and the temple utterly destroyed. And they will not leave in you one stone upon another. And Jesus uses the same wording, that the temple, there will not be one stone left upon another. And this is why. Here's the reason he tells the people. Because you did not know the time of your visitation. What was this visitation? The visitation of the Messiah. And so he was talking to a broader people than these that were actually listening. Because these that were lining his walkway as he came into Jerusalem, those obviously were accepting Jesus as the Messiah. Now, who knows if they might have changed their mind, but there was he's mostly talking to the broader majority of people who were not there accepting Jesus as the Messiah coming into Jerusalem. And that's what is, you did not know the time of your visitation, when the Messiah came to visit you. So we will end there, and Lord willing, we'll pick up with verse 45 next week.